Persuasion by Jane Austen, dramatised for radio in three parts by Micheline Wandor, with Juliet Stevenson as Anne Elliot, Tim Brierley as Frederick Wentworth, and Sirica Cusack as Jane Austen. Part 2, Accidents and Encounters.
Miss Anne Elliot, daughter of Sir Walter Elliot, was, at the age of 19, in love with Captain Frederick Wentworth. However, in response to adverse pressure from family and friends, she was persuaded to end the relationship. Now, 8 years later, Captain Wentworth has returned to the village of Uppercross in Somersetshire, where he has become the centre of social life for the Musgrove family.
I have received a letter from my friend, Captain Harville. He is settled with his family at Lyme for the winter, and we have been quite unknowingly within 20 miles of each other. I am most anxious to go and see him.
Oh, I am wild to see Lyme, Captain Wentworth.
And I, Louisa.
We must go immediately, Henrietta.
It is too late to go today, Miss Louisa.
Tomorrow. We must go tomorrow.
But Louisa, it is November.
The weather is by no means bad, Mamma.
We shall put it off until the summer.
We can go in the morning and return at night.
For the sake of the horses, I cannot consent.
If we consider it rationally, Miss Louisa, a day in the middle of November will not leave much time for seeing a new place, after deducting 7 hours for going and returning.
Then we shall stay the night, and the horses will not suffer, Mamma.
Well, that is a considerable amendment.
Good. We shall have a very early breakfast and set off most punctually.
It was something past noon when two carriages descended the long hill into Lyme. In one carriage travelled Charles and Mary Musgrove with Anne, and the other held Captain Wentworth, Henrietta and Louisa. After ordering a dinner at one of the inns, the next thing to be done was unquestionably to walk directly down to the sea.
I am afraid we are come too late in the year for any amusement or variety in Lyme.
The rooms are all shut up. The lodge is almost all gone.
But we can walk to the Cobb.
They skirted round a pleasant little bay, which in the season is animated with bathing machines and company, and there was the Cobb itself, with a very beautiful line of cliffs stretching out to the east of the town.
Tell us about your friends the Harvilles, Captain Wentworth.
Captain Harville and I are brother officers and have known each other for some time. He also has a friend staying, a Captain Bennett. He's an excellent young man and an officer whom I value greatly. He was engaged to Captain Harville's sister and is now mourning her loss. She died last summer while he was at sea.
How dreadfully sad.
I believe it impossible to become more attached to a woman than Captain Bennett was to Fanny Harville.
Has he suffered dreadfully?
Indeed. He unites very strong feelings with quite serious and retiring manners and a decided taste for reading.
Does he now live with the Harvilles?
Entirely. Captain Harville has taken his present house for half a year, and the retirement of Lyme in the winter appears exactly adapted to Captain Bennett's state of mind. And here is Captain Harville's house.
Captain Harville was a tall, dark man with a sensible, benevolent countenance. Captain Bennett had a pleasing face and a melancholy air.
You will all dine with us.
We are dining at the inn, Harville.
Captain Wentworth, you could not have brought a party to Lyme without considering it as the thing of course that you should all dine with us.
There was such a bewitching charm and degree of hospitality that Anne felt her spirits had to struggle against a great tendency to lowness.
These would have been all my friends.
I gather, Captain Bennett, that you have put up a number of shelves in the house.
Yes, indeed.
And I see that you have quite a small library here. Do you read a great deal?
Indeed I do, Miss Elliot.
Do you read poetry?
I do. I am so impressed with the richness of the present age.
I wonder if we have any agreement on the first-rate poets of the day.
Try me, Miss Elliot.
Do you prefer Scott or Byron?
I think at the moment I would not care to make a preference in favour of one over the other.
I think you should have a larger allowance of prose in your study, if I may venture to be so bold.
Do you have any particular suggestions?
I think perhaps something which would fortify the mind by high precepts and the strongest examples of moral and religious endurance, if you are undergoing a time of grief.
Anne could not but be amused at the idea that, like many other great moralists and preachers, she had been eloquent on a point in which her own conduct would ill bear examination. The following morning, Anne and Henrietta found themselves the earliest of the party.
What a beautiful morning!
The sands are so flat and far-reaching.
And the breeze, so fresh.
I'm quite convinced that with very few exceptions, the sea air always does good. After his illness last spring, Dr. Shirley declared that coming to Lyme did him more good than all the medicine he took.
Yes, I can understand that.
I cannot help feeling it a pity that he does not live entirely by the sea. Mrs. Shirley has cousins here, you know, and many acquaintances which would make it cheerful for her.
Do you think he could be persuaded to leave his parish?
That is a problem. Do not you think it is quite a mistake when a clergyman sacrifices his health for the sake of duties which may be just as well performed by another person?
Do you have a particular other person in mind, Henrietta?
Anne knew that Henrietta was thinking of her cousin Charles Hayter.
I am sure he should find some young man to be a resident curate.
Someone active and respectable. And perhaps there could be some great advantage in such a resident curate being married.
Do you think so? Oh, look, Louisa and Captain Wentworth also for a stroll till breakfast.
Good morning, Anne.
Henrietta, it is a beautiful day.
It is indeed, Miss Henrietta.
We have been strolling along the Cobb.
Have you seen the sea, Miss Elliot?
I have, Captain Wentworth. The waves are quite dramatic.
I cannot wait for breakfast. Shall we go back up the steps?
Excuse me.
When this gentleman has passed.
Pardon me, sir.
Thank you, madam.
He is looking at you, Miss Elliot, with a degree of earnest admiration.
Anne was looking remarkably well, her very regular, very pretty features having the bloom and freshness of youth restored by the fine wind. It was evident that the gentleman,
completely a gentleman in manner,
admired her exceedingly. Captain Wentworth observed the gentleman and gave Anne a momentary glance.
I have seen him at the inn. I do believe he is staying there with his groom, and they are both in mourning. How intriguing.
I'm most obliged to you. Good day.
The gentleman seemed about 30, and though not handsome, had an agreeable person.
I should like to know who he is.
Later, at the inn, when they had nearly done breakfast...
That sounds like a curricle. Mm-hmm. The first we've heard since entering Lyme. Oh, I must see if it compares with my own.
I shall come to the window with you, Charles.
And I, Charles.
It is a gentleman's carriage. Look, Mary.
Oh, yes. It is coming round the stable yard to the front door.
Oh. Somebody must be going away.
It is driven by a servant in mourning.
A servant in mourning?
Look, Miss Louisa, there is the gentleman. It is the very man we passed down by the cob.
Let me see.
So it is, Captain Wentworth. I wonder who he is and where he's going.
Waiter. Waiter, pray, can you tell us the name of the gentleman who is just gone away?
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Elliot.
Sir Elliot?
A gentleman of large fortune. I dare say you heard the carriage, sir, while you were at dinner.
Bless me, it must be our cousin. It must be our Mr. Elliot. It must indeed.
Mary, surely not.
Oh, but of course. He is in mourning, you see, just as our Mr. Elliot must be. How very extraordinary. In the same inn with us. Anne, must not it be our Mr. Elliot, my father's heir?
I'm not sure.
Waiter, did his servant say whether he belonged to the Kellynch family?
No, ma'am. He just said his master was a very rich gentleman and would be a baronet someday.
There, you see, just as I said, heir to Sir Walter Elliot.
Mary, you must not jump to conclusions.
Oh, what a pity that we should not have been introduced to each other. Do you think he had the Elliot countenance, Anne?
I cannot tell, Mary.
Oh, I am sure he has something of the Elliot countenance.
I think we should forget all about this, Mary. Oh. After all, for years, Papa and Mr. Elliot have not been on such terms as to make the power of attempting an introduction at all desirable.
At the same time, however, it was a secret gratification to Anne to have seen her cousin, and to know that the future owner of Kellynch was undoubtedly a gentleman, and had an air of good sense.
Of course, you will mention our seeing Mr. Elliot, Anne, next time you write to Bath. I think my father certainly ought to hear of it.
The following morning, the party was joined by Captains Harville and Bennick.
Miss Elliot, you have done a good deed in making poor Bennett talk so much the other day. I wish he could have such company oftener.
In time,
Perhaps he will recover. You must remember, Captain Harville, that your friend is yet a young mourner. Only last summer, I understand.
Aye, true enough. Only June.
And not known to him, perhaps, so soon?
Not till the first week in August, when he came home from the Cape. I could not tell him the news.
Then who did tell him?
That good fellow Wentworth went straight to Benwick, told him the sad news, and never left the poor fellow for a week. You may think, Miss Elliot, whether he is dear to us.
I can perfectly understand how he may be.
Come along, everyone! We must walk along the cottages once more!
Oh, Louisa, we're tired!
Oh, nonsense! Oh. Captain Benwick, you will come!
I shall indeed. Miss Elliot,
does not the sea remind you of something?
It reminds me of Lord Byron's dark blue seas.
The phrase that was exactly in my mind, too.
The high part of the new carb is far too windy to be pleasing to the ladies. I suggest you come down the steps to the lower part.
A good idea, Captain Wentworth. You shall help me down yourself. I insist on being jumped down the steps by you.
That is not the pavement too hard for your feet?
Not at all. As soon as I get down to the lower level, I shall run up the steps to be jumped down again.
I advise you against it, Miss Louisa. I am sure the jar will be far too great.
I am absolutely determined.
Very well, then.
Are you ready, Captain Wentworth?
I am.
Put out your hand, then.
Captain Wentworth!
What?
You're looking at me!
Catch me!
Not yet, Miss Louisa! Ah! Be careful!
Oh! Oh, Louisa! Louisa! Oh. What has happened to her?
Good heavens, Miss Louisa!
Let me see. There's no wound.
She's hurt!
No blood or visible
bruise. But look, her eyes are closed. She breathes not. Oh,
like
no!
Death. She's like ice.
She's dead! She's dead! Oh, Charles, do something! Louisa is dead!
I cannot be Captain Bennett! Help me, Henrietta is sinking. Losing her senses too.
Is there no one here to help
me? Captain Bennett, go to him. For heaven's sake, go to him. I can support Henrietta myself. Rub Louise's hands. Rub her temples. Here, I have some salts. Take them.
Help me lift him, Mr. Musgrove.
There. We can support her between us, that's right.
We must find a surgeon.
True, a surgeon this instant. I shall go and find a surgeon.
Would it not be better for Captain Benwick to go? He must know where a surgeon is to be found.
An excellent idea. Mr. Musgrove, can you manage her alone?
Yes, I can. Now make for the town as rapidly as you can. Oh, Louisa. Poor dear Louisa.
Oh, Charles, help me. And do something.
Mary, sit quietly. Charles, stay as you are with Louisa until Captain Benwick comes back with a surgeon.
It is my fault. I should not have allowed her to run back up the steps.
You are not to blame, Captain Wentworth.
And what is to be done next? What in heaven's name is to be done next?
Had not she better be carried to a house? Yes, I'm sure. Carry her gently to the inn. Or better still, to Captain Harville's house. It is close by.
Yes, we must carry her to Captain Harville's house.
I will carry her myself. Musgrove, you take care of the others. Give her to me.
Henrietta, can you manage to walk alone?
Yes, I think so, Anne. Thank you.
Charles, help Mary, please. Captain Wentworth has Louisa.
Louisa, under Captain Harville's direction, was conveyed upstairs. Cordials and restoratives were then supplied to all who needed them.
Is there any hope?
She has received a severe contusion to the head. But there are no injuries to her limbs whatsoever.
Is she a desperate case?
The surgeon says not.
Oh. Thank God.
The tone, the look with which Captain Wentworth uttered this, Anne was sure could never be forgotten by her. Nor the sight of him afterwards as he sat near a table, leaning over it with folded arms and face concealed, as if overpowered by the various feelings of his soul.
She cannot be removed.
She is very welcome to remain with us.
Oh, but we would not dream of imposing upon you.
That is most kind, Captain Harville.
I am only concerned that the house can accommodate no more.
How is the news to be broken to Mama?
It is so late already. An hour gone since we should have been on our way home.
Musgrove, either you or I must go.
Well, I cannot leave my sister in such a state.
I declare exactly the same.
But Henrietta, you could not remain in Louisa's room or look at her without sufferings which make you worse than hopeless.
I suppose I can do no good.
Henrietta, you are the best person to console Mother.
Yes, I can see that.
And are you not anxious to see all at home?
Well, I consent. I must confess I am anxious to be at home.
I shall accompany Miss Henrietta home, if Miss Elliot will stay.
That is the perfect solution.
Miss Elliot? You will stay, I'm sure.
you will stay and nurse her.
I am most willing, indeed most happy to remain.
I cannot possibly be expected to go away instead of Anne.
Mary, it is far better that you should go home.
But why may not I be as useful as Anne?
The children need you, my dear.
But to go home without you, Charles, without my husband. Oh, no, it is too unkind. I refuse to leave.
Oh, Mary.
I do not wish to hear another word. I shall stay. Anne shall go back to Uppercross.
Very well, then, Mary.
On the journey back, Captain Wentworth devoted his attention to Henrietta.
Oh, I wish we had not taken that last ill-judged walk to the cob. I wish it had never been thought of.
Don't talk of it. Oh, God, that I had not given way to her at that fatal moment. Dear, sweet Louisa.
It was growing quite dusk before they were in the neighbourhood of Uppercross. Henrietta, with a shawl over her face, was leaning back in the corner, asleep.
Miss Elliot, may I speak to you?
Of course, Captain Wentworth.
I have been considering what we had best do.
Yes?
I have been thinking whether you had not better remain in the carriage with Miss Henrietta while I go in and break the news to Mrs. Musgrove. Do you think this is a good plan?
I think it the best possible plan.
Thank you.
When the distressing communication at Uppercross was over, Captain Wentworth announced his intention of returning in the same carriage to Lyme, which he did. The following morning, the news brought by Charles Musgrove was cheerful.
Louisa is very much the same, Mama. No symptoms worse than before have appeared.
And she will improve rapidly.
A speedy cure must not be hoped, but everything is going on well. I shall return to Lyme again this afternoon.
Is Captain Wentworth returning here?
As far as I can see, Captain Wentworth appears quite fixed at Lyme.
Tomorrow Miss Anne is to leave us to go to Bath. What am I to do without you, my dear?
I believe you should go to Lyme at once. Mm-hmm. You can remain there until dear Louisa can be moved.
Well, that is an excellent thought.
There could be no doubt in Anne's mind of what could follow Louisa's recovery with Captain Wentworth there by her side. An hour's complete leisure for such reflections as these on a dark November day, a small, thick rain almost blotting out the very few objects to be discerned from the windows, was enough to make the prospect of a visit to Lady Russell exceedingly welcome.
Why, Anne, you are greatly improved.
Lady Russell, how do you mean?
You have colour in your cheeks, and I do believe you have grown somewhat in plumpness.
Anne had the amusement of connecting these compliments with the silent admiration of her cousin, Mr. Elliot, and of hoping that she was to be blessed with a second spring of youth and beauty.
Your dear father and sister have taken a most suitable house in Camden Place in Bath.
Why, yes, of course, I do believe they have.
That dreadful Mrs. Clay is still with them. Anne, you're not listening to me. What are you thinking of?
Oh, Lady Russell, I was feeling glad that Louisa Musgrove was faring better in Lyme. I had a note today. You heard of her misfortune?
I heard something of it. How imprudent of Louisa to behave in such a fashion. Were you all there to help her?
Oh, indeed, Captain Wentworth was helping her down the steps at the time.
Then I must certainly hold him in part responsible.
Oh, no, 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 he was not indeed. It was entirely Louisa's foolishness.
Is there some kind of attachment between the two of them?
I do believe there must be. Captain Wentworth went immediately back to Lyme to be with Louisa after the accident.
Well, I suppose I wish them happy. But no more of them. I must call on Mrs. Croft at Kellynch. Have you the courage to go with me?
I do not shrink from it. I must confess, my father is very fortunate indeed in his tenants.
Well, I shall soon see all of that for myself. By the way, from where do you receive the notes about Louisa's welfare?
I really do not know. The notes have simply been left for me.
I Have you seen Captain Wentworth lately, Mrs. Croft?
Yes. My brother brought news of Louisa yesterday at noon, stayed for a few hours, and then returned to Lyme without any present intention of quitting it any more.
It was at 9:30 that I received the last note about Louisa.
Captain Wentworth expressed his hope of you not being the worse for your exertions.
Thank you, Admiral Croft. I wonder how long Louisa is liable to suffer from the concussion.
A new sort of way, this, for a young fellow to be making love by breaking his mistress's head.
Admiral, my dear.
Now, this must be very bad for you, Miss Elliot, to be coming and finding us living in your father's house. But now, do not stand upon ceremony. Get up and go over all the rooms, if you like to.
Another time, sir. I thank you, but
well,
not now.
You can slip in from the shrubbery at any time. We've made very few changes. I've done very little, besides sending away some of the large looking-glasses from my dressing room, which was your father's.
Sir Walter was very fond of those looking-glasses.
I should think, Miss Elliot, he must be a rather dressy man for his time of life. Such a number of looking-glasses.
I believe you have the measure of my father, sir.
So, I got Sophia to lend me a hand, and we soon shifted their quarters.
The next news Anne and Lady Russell received of Louisa's welfare was from Mary on her return to Uppercross.
Louisa is quite well. We left her beginning to sit up.
How is her head?
Oh, it is clear, but exceedingly weak. And her nerves are susceptible to the highest extreme of tenderness, are they not, Charles?
She's certainly doing very well.
Oh, it is still impossible to say when she might be able to bear the removal home. Her mother and father will return in time to receive their younger children for the Christmas holidays, but they have hardly a hope of being allowed to bring her with them.
And how about you, Mary?
Oh, on the whole, I found more to enjoy than to suffer. I went to Charmouth. I bathed. I went to church. And there were a great many more people to look at in the church at Lyme than at Uppercross. And I really was so very useful. It was a most agreeable fortnight.
And Captain Benwick?
Oh, dear.
Captain Benwick is very well, I believe. We asked him to come home with us to give him some shooting.
He seemed quite delighted. But on Tuesday night he made a very awkward excuse. He never shot, he said. I suppose he was afraid of finding it dull.
Now, Mary, you know very well how it was. It was all your doing, Anne. He fancied that if he went with us, he should find you close by.
I do not consider that Captain Benwick is entitled either by birth or situation to be in love with an Elliot.
He talks of you in such terms.
I declare, Charles, I never heard him mention Anne twice all the time I was there.
Now, Mary, I declare it was so. Elegance, sweetness and beauty. Oh, there was no end of Miss Elliot's charms.
And I'm sure that it was very little to his credit if he did. Miss Harville only died last June. Such a heart is very little worth having, is it, Lady Russell?
I'm afraid I must see Captain Benwick before I decide.
Well, and that you're very likely to do soon. He will make his way over to Kellynch one day by himself, you may depend upon it. I told him the church was well worth seeing.
Any acquaintance of Anne's will always be welcome to me.
I think he is rather my acquaintance, for I have been seeing him every day this last fortnight.
Well, as your joint acquaintance, then, I shall be very happy to see Captain Benwick.
I assure you, ma'am, he is one of the dullest young men that ever lived.
I think Lady Russell will like him.
Oh, he's just Lady Russell's sort. Give him a book and he will read all day long.
Yes, that he will. He will sit poring over his book and not know when one drops one's scissors. However, we did see someone far more interesting.
And who is that?
Why, Mr. Walter Elliot, my father's heir.
He is a man whom I have no wish to see. His declining to be on cordial terms with the head of his family has left a very strong impression in his disfavour with me.
Oh, but Lady Russell...
And how is Captain Wentworth?
As Louisa has improved, he has improved. He is now quite a different creature.
He has not seen Louisa. He was so fearful of any ill consequence to her from an interview that he is not pressed for it at all.
He has talked of going down to Shropshire to visit his brother.
Anne put away any thought of seeing Captain Wentworth again, and before long it was time for her to travel to Bath with Lady Russell. They entered Bath on a wet afternoon, driving through the streets amidst the dash of other carriages, the heavy rumble of carts and drays, the shouting of newsmen, muffin men and milkmen.
These are noises which belong to the winter pleasures. My spirits rise under their influence.
I'm afraid I do not share these feelings.
I wish you would not persist in your determined disinclination for Bath. The place is so full of people.
But who is glad to see me? I look back with fond regret the bustles of Uppercross and the seclusion of Kellynch. There is someone.
Oh? And who is that?
I have heard that Mr. Elliot is in Bath.
Indeed.
He called in Camden Place and was pointedly attentive. Elizabeth writes that he has been taking as much pains to seek their acquaintance as he formerly took pains to show neglect.
Well, this news puts me in a very agreeable state of curiosity about Mr. Elliot. If he really seeks to reconcile himself like a dutiful branch, he must be forgiven for having dismembered himself from the paternal tree.
I do not see it at quite the pitch of solemnity you do, Lady Russell. But I must confess that I would rather see Mr. Elliot again than not. Which is more than I can say for many other persons in Bath.
We have arrived in Camden Place, Anne.
Sir Walter had taken a very good house in Camden Place. A lofty, dignified situation, such as became a man of consequence. And both he and Elizabeth were settled there, much to their satisfaction. Anne entered the house with a sinking heart, anticipating an imprisonment of many months.
My dear Anne.
Father.
How good to see you.
Welcome, Anne. Mrs. Clare and I have talked of nothing but your arrival for a full hour this morning, have we not, Mrs. Clare?
Oh, yes, indeed.
This house is undoubtedly the best in Camden Place.
Our acquaintance is exceedingly sought after.
Everybody wants to visit us.
We are still perpetually having cards by people of whom we know nothing.
Can you wonder, Anne, that we are so happy here?
She might not wonder, but she must sigh that her father should find so much to be vain of in the littleness of the town.
Here, Anne, we can throw open the folding doors and walk from one drawing room through to the other.
Kellynch Hall was somewhat larger.
There is a full 30 feet between these two walls. One has to raise one's voice to be heard at the other end of the drawing rooms. And, my dear Anne, we have something else. We have Mr. Elliot.
Is Mr. Elliot now pardoned for his past behaviour?
Oh, yes. He is most certainly pardoned, and we are absolutely delighted with him.
He called on us, and was so ready to apologise for the past, and had such solicitude to be received as a relation again, that our former good understanding was completely re-established.
And what of the circumstances of his marriage?
I am assured of her having been a very fine woman with a large fortune in love with him. This must count as a complete apology for his having neglected Elizabeth.
Well, I cannot see the circumstance in quite so favourable light, but I do allow it to be a great extenuation.
He is delighted, in short, by every proof of cousinly notice, and places his whole happiness in being on intimate terms in Camden Place.
I do believe he has a further interest in calling here.
And what is that, Mrs. Clay?
Well, I do not wish to say too much, but there is a certain young person here.
Oh, Mrs. Clay, really?
I have noticed the way he looks at you when he calls, Miss Elizabeth. You shall meet him soon, Miss Anne.
I do believe I may have glimpsed him at Lyme. He was tall and...
Mr. Elliot has a most gentlemanlike appearance. He has an air of elegance and fashion, and a good-shaped face, a sensible eye. Mr. Elliot is better to look at than most men, and I have no objection to being seen with him anywhere.
He is staying with the Colonel and Mrs. Wallace, as she is in daily expectation of her confinement.
Mrs. Wallace is said to be an excessively pretty woman, quite beautiful. I long to see her. I hoped she might make some amends for the very many plain faces I am continually passing on the street.
Bath, Father?
The worst of Bath is the number of its plain women. Once, as I stood in a shop in Bond Street, I counted 87 women go by one after another without there being a tolerable face among them.
And the men, Father?
Oh, the men are infinitely worse. Such scarecrows as the streets are full of. It is evident how little the women are used to the sight of anything tolerable by the effect which a man of decent appearance produces.
Oh, Sir Walter, you must not be too modest about yourself.
As you wish, Mrs. Clay. How is Mary looking, my dear Anne? The last time I saw her, she had a red nose.
That must have been quite accidental. She has been in good health and very good looks since Michaelmas.
If I thought it would not tempt her to go out in sharp winds and grow coarse, I would send her a new hat and pelisse.
Well, perhaps a gown or a cap would not be liable to any such misuse.
Oh, knock at the door. Are we expecting anyone, Elizabeth?
Perhaps it is Mr. Elliot.
It is decidedly Mr. Elliot's knock.
It was the same, the very same man.
My dear friend, I could not be so near without wishing to know that both you, Miss Elliot, and your friend, Mrs. Clay, were well.
It is so kind of you.
So kind of you to call.
Mr. Elliot, my youngest daughter has come to stay with us in Bath. Do give me leave to present you my youngest daughter, Anne.
Well, I do believe I should be received as an acquaintance already.
How is that?
I did tell you, Papa, that I thought I had seen Mr. Elliot very fleetingly at Lyme.
Indeed, we passed one another on the steps down to the cop.
He's quite as good-looking as he appeared at Lyme.
Do sit down with us, Mr. Elliot.
Thank you very much, Sir Walter. Miss Anne, have you been back to Lyme since I saw you there?
I have not, Mr. Elliot. I believe that we happened to be guests at the same inn at the same time. We saw you from the window.
We?
Myself and my family. We were there on what began as a happy visit to Lyme, but ended, sadly, with an accident to one of our party.
I'm sad to hear that. I do believe I must have spent my entire solitary evening in the room adjoining yours. I heard voices and mirth continually, and thought you must be the most delightful set of people. If I had but asked who the party were, the name of Musgrove would have told me quite enough.
I wish that you had, Mr. Elliot.
Well, it'll serve to cure me of the absurd practice of never asking a question at an inn. I hope I shall be able to hear the account of the accident from you at greater length.
Indeed. I hope so too, Mr. Elliot.
I did see you at Lyme, Miss Elliot, did I not?
And Anne remembered another person's look also.
Ah, Anne, may I compliment you on your improved looks? I think you are less thin in your person, in your cheeks. Your skin, your complexion is greatly improved. Have you been using anything in particular?
No, nothing at all.
Oh, I'm surprised at that. Mrs. Clay has been using a preparation at my recommendation, and you see how it has carried away her freckles.
Indeed it has, Sir Walter.
Oh, do look here, Mr. Elliot. The Bath paper has announced the arrival of our cousins, the Dowager Countess Dalrymple, and her daughter, the Honourable Miss Carteret. We must introduce ourselves.
But how?
How to introduce ourselves properly to the nobility.
I do wish Elizabeth and my father had more pride.
I was once in company with the late Viscount, but I've never seen the rest of the family. Has there been any correspondence between
them? I recall now there has been a suspension of all intercourse by letters of ceremony ever since the death of the late Viscount. In consequence of a dangerous illness of my own, I was unable to send a letter of condolence. The family, in turn, neglected the death of my own dear wife.
How can you set this anxious business to rights?
Where is Lady Dalrymple staying?
In Laura Place. She'll be living in style.
Family connections are always worth preserving. Good company always worth seeking.
It is very desirable that the connection should be renewed, if it can be done without any compromise of propriety on the side of the Elliots.
I do believe it is most appropriate for me to write a letter, a very fine letter, with ample explanation.
Not too ample, my dear father.
Ample explanation, regret and entreaty to my right honourable cousin.
The letter did all that was wanted in bringing three lines from the Dowager Countess. The toils of the business were over, the sweets began.
Had Lady Dalrymple and her daughter even been very agreeable, I would still have been ashamed of the agitation they create. But they are nothing. There is no superiority of manner, accomplishment, or understanding.
Lady Dalrymple had acquired the name of a charming woman.
Because she has a smile and a civil answer for everybody.
Miss Carteret couldn't offend with what she said.
She is so plain and so awkward that she would never have been tolerated in Camden Place but for her birth.
Our cousins in Laura Place.
Our cousins, Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret.
I must confess I had expected something better, but you must admit, Anne, that it is an acquaintance worth having.
Surely you will agree with me, Mr. Elliot?
Oh, I do agree that they are nothing in themselves.
But I still maintain that as a family connection and good company, they have their value.
My idea of good company, Mr. Elliot, is the company of clever, well-informed people.
You are mistaken. That is not good company, that is the best. Good company requires only birth, education, and manners.
Well, perhaps I am not interested in good company.
My dear cousin, you have a better right to be fastidious than almost any other woman I know, but will it answer? Will it make you happy?
That I cannot tell you.
Will it not be wiser to accept the society of those good ladies in Laura Place?
I cannot see why.
You may depend upon it they will move in the first set in Bath this winter. And as rank is rank, your being known to be related to them will have its use.
Well, I certainly am too proud to enjoy a welcome which depends so entirely upon place.
I love your indignation. It is very natural. But here you are in Bath. And the object is to be established here with all the credit and dignity which ought to belong to Sir Walter Elliot. Such would be my aim.
So you think we are alike?
In one point, my dear cousin, we must feel alike. Every addition to your father's society amongst his equals and superiors may be of use in diverting his thoughts from those who are beneath him.
You are referring to Mrs. Clay.
I have looked in her direction, yes.
You are correct in assuming that this is one point in which we do feel alike.
As Mr. Elliot became known to Anne, she grew more charitable, or more indifferent, towards the others. His manners were an immediate recommendation.
He is steady, observant, moderate, candid.
And yet with a sensibility to what is amiable and lovely, and a value for all the felicities of domestic life. Even Lady Russell added her approval.
I cannot seriously picture to myself a more agreeable or estimable man.
Oh, I concur in that opinion, Lady Russell.
Everything unites in him. Good understanding, correct opinions, knowledge of the world, and a warm heart. He has strong feelings of family attachment and family honour without pride or weakness. I'm sure he was not happy in marriage.
It does not surprise me, Lady Russell, that you should see nothing to require more motives than appear in Mr. Elliot's great desire of a reconciliation.
In my view, it is perfectly natural that Mr. Elliot, at a mature time of life, should feel it desirable to be on good terms with the head of his family.
Well, I still smile about the opinion.
What else can there possibly be?
Why, Lady Russell, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth? Of course, Elizabeth must be first. Well, time will tell. However it might end, he is without question our pleasantest acquaintance in Bath.
While Sir Walter and Elizabeth were assiduously pushing their good fortune in Laura Place, Anne was renewing an acquaintance of a very different description. She had received news that a former school friend, a Miss Hamilton, now Mrs. Smith, was in Bath.
Is this all you have, Mrs. Smith?
Oh, a noisy parlour and a dark bedroom behind.
Have you no help at all?
There is one servant who will help me now and again.
And do you never quit the house?
No, only very occasionally, to be conveyed into the warm bath to ease the rheumatic fever.
Are you not very low in spirits?
Oh, at moments. But I find great comfort in the visit of anyone. You are the choicest gift of heaven to me.
Was there no time when your spirits failed?
Oh, indeed there was. I could not call myself an invalid now, compared with my state on first reaching Bath. But my landlady's sister was a nurse by profession, and by sheer chance she was at liberty just in time to attend me. She has proved invaluable.
In what way?
Oh, she taught me to knit. And she put me in the way of making little thread cases, pincushions and card racks to sell.
I hope I shall have the pleasure of meeting her.
Call it gossip if you will. But when Nurse Rook has half an hour's leisure to bestow on me, she is sure to have something to relate that is entertaining and profitable. But I do not suppose the situation she is in at present will furnish much to interest me. She is nursing Mrs. Wallace of Marlborough Buildings.
Mrs. Wallace? Indeed.
Yes, a mere pretty, silly, fashionable woman, I believe. However, she has plenty of money, and I intend she should buy all the high-priced things I have in hand now.
Anne was refreshed and made thoughtful by this new old acquaintance.
Thank you.
coming with us this evening.
Where to, Elizabeth?
Why, to Lady Dalrymple's. We have received a sudden invitation from Laura Place for this evening.
I did not know that.
I'm sure Mrs. Clay would have told you.
I'm afraid she did not.
Oh, no matter. You shall come with us this evening anyway.
I cannot.
Cannot?
I'm already engaged.
But how can you possibly be engaged?
I'm spending the evening in Westgate Buildings.
And who is Miss Anne Elliot to be visiting in Westgate Buildings?
An old schoolfellow, Father, a Mrs. Smith.
A Mrs. Smith? Who is Mr. Smith, pray?
There is no Mr. Smith.
A widow, Mrs. Smith? Who was the husband? One of the 5,000 Mr. Smiths whose names are to be met with everywhere?
This is a very particular Mrs. Smith.
What is her attraction? That she is old and sickly?
Not exactly, Father.
Upon my word, Miss Anne Elliot, you have the most extraordinary taste. Everything that revolts other people, low company, paltry rooms, foul air, disgusting associations, are inviting to you.
I would not describe her abode in that fashion, Father.
But sure, you may put off this old lady till tomorrow.
Sir, she is not 31. I do not think I can put off my engagement.
I cannot see why.
She goes into the warm bath tomorrow, and for the rest of the week, you know, we are engaged.
You have called on Mrs. Smith before?
A number of times, sir.
Westgate Buildings must have been rather surprised by the appearance of a carriage drawn up near its pavement.
I do not think anybody remarked upon it.
A mere Mrs. Smith. An everyday Mrs. Smith. Of all the people and all the names in the world to be chosen friend of Miss Anne Elliot and to be preferred by her to her own family connections among the nobility of England and Ireland, Mrs. Smith.
I could refrain from saying that Mrs. Smith is not the only widow in Bath between 30 and 40 who has little to live on and no surname of dignity.
I know of no other.
Well, perhaps Elizabeth does.
Who can you mean?
Someone who lives under this very roof with us, against whom no one raises any kind of objection.
You mean Mrs. Clay?
Oh, Mrs. Clay is entirely different. Mrs. Clay is no Mrs. Smith. Hey, Elizabeth?
Indeed, no, Father.
Then I shall keep my appointment, and you may keep yours.
Elizabeth made sure that Anne was fully informed of what she had missed.
My only regret, Lady Russell, was that I was not there to hear your conversation with Mr. Elliot.
Mr. Elliot was quite delighted in your compassionate visits to your old schoolfellow. He thinks you a most extraordinary young woman and a model of female excellence. We met evenly in a discussion of your merits.
You flatter me, Lady Russell.
You must know yourself to be highly rated by a sensible man, my dear Anne. I am as much convinced of his meaning to gain you in time as of his deserving you.
Oh, Lady Russell.
I am no matchmaker, as you well know.
Then perhaps you should not speculate.
I only mean that if Mr. Elliot should pay his addresses to you, and if you should be disposed to accept him, I think there would be every possibility of your being happy together.
You think so?
A most suitable connection, and I think it might be a very happy one.
Mr. Elliot is an exceedingly agreeable man, but I fear we should not suit.
To be able to regard you as the future mistress of Kellynch, to see you occupying your dear mother's place would be the highest possible gratification to me.
You're so kind to me, Lady Russell.
You are your mother's self in countenance and disposition.
Oh, Lady Russell, I cannot speak.
For a few moments, her imagination and her heart were bewitched.
The idea of becoming what my mother was,
of having the precious name of Lady Elliot first revived in herself,
of being restored to Kellynch, calling it my home again, my home forever.
This was a charm that Anne could not immediately resist.
I shall say not another word, Anne. I do believe that Mr. Elliot can speak for himself.
The image of Mr. Elliot speaking for himself brought Anne to composure again. The charm of Kellynch and of Lady Elliot all faded away.
I never could accept him.
It was not only that her feelings were adverse to any man save one.
My judgment is against Mr. Elliot.
But I cannot see why. You have been acquainted with him for some time.
Nearly a month. And I cannot be satisfied that I really know his character. But you will admit that he is a sensible and agreeable man.
Oh, he talks well, he professes good opinions, he seems to judge properly, and is a man of principle. This is all clear enough.
Then in what way has he transgressed?
I cannot fix on any one article. Yet, for some reason, I would be afraid to answer for his conduct. I distrust the past, if not the present.
In what respect the past? His wife?
No. No, it is the names which occasionally drop of former associates, former practices and pursuits. I think there have been some bad habits, that Sunday travelling has been a common thing.
But you will own that he is rational, discreet, polished?
Yes, but he is not open. There is never any burst of feeling, any warmth of indignation or delight at the evil or good of others.
What is it you prize, then?
The frank, open-hearted, eager character beyond all others. Warmth and enthusiasm captivate me still. I feel I can so much more depend upon the sincerity of someone who may say a careless or a hasty thing than of someone whose presence of mind never varies, whose tongue never slips.
Do you have someone else in mind?
Perhaps. Indeed, as I think about it, Mr. Elliot is too generally agreeable. He stands too well with everybody. Take Mrs. Clay, for instance.
Mrs. Clay?
He has spoken to me with some degree of openness of Mrs. Clay, has appeared completely to see what Mrs. Clay is about and to hold her in contempt. And yet Mrs. Clay finds him as agreeable as anybody.
Well, my dear young friend, I see either less or more than you. But I see nothing to excite distrust. I cannot imagine a man more exactly what he ought to be than Mr. Elliot. Nor have I ever enjoyed a sweeter feeling than the hope of seeing him receive the hand of my beloved Anne in Kellynch Church in the course of the coming autumn.
We shall see, Lady Russell.
It was the beginning of February, and Anne, having been a month in Bath, was growing very eager for news from Uppercross and Lyme. One evening, a thicker letter than usual from Mary was delivered to her, with Admiral and Mrs. Croft's compliments.
Oh, the Crofts must be in Bath.
The Crofts who rent Kellynch?
Yes, Father.
I shall visit Admiral Croft. I know what is due to my tenant.
While Sir Walter hastened to inform Elizabeth, Anne settled to read her letter.
My dear Anne, we have had a very dull Christmas. Mr. and Mrs. Musgrove have not had one dinner party all the holiday.
Oh, dear, dear Mary.
The holidays, however, are over at last. I have not had a creature call on me since the second week in January. I am sorry to say that I am very far from well. Jemima tells me that the butcher says there is a bad sore throat very much about. I dare say I shall catch it, and my sore throats are always worse than anybody's. Now for Louisa. Captain Benwick is in love with her. It was all settled in Lyme, true upon my honour.
Louisa and Captain Benwick?
We are all very pleased, although it is not equal to her marrying Captain Wentworth. And this is the end, you see, of Captain Benwick supposed to be an admirer of yours.
Captain Benwick and Louisa Musgrove? It is almost too wonderful for belief. The high-spirited, joyous, talking Louisa Musgrove and the dejected, thinking, feeling, reading Captain Benwick? Most dissimilar.
Where could have been the attraction?
It must have been in situation. They had been thrown together several weeks, living in the same small family party. Since Henrietta's coming away, they must have been depending almost entirely on each other. Louisa just recovering from illness, and Captain Benwick not inconsolable.
And Captain Benwick's tenderness towards Anne Elliot?
I am persuaded that any tolerably pleasing young woman would have received the same compliment. He has an affectionate heart.
Anne saw no reason against their being happy.
He will gain cheerfulness, and she will learn to be an enthusiast for Scott and Lord Byron.
The idea of Louisa Musgrove turning into a person of literary taste and sentimental reflection was amusing.
The day at Lyme, the fall from the cob, might influence her health, her nerves, her courage, her character. If Captain Wentworth has lost no friend by this, then there is nothing to be regretted.
It was not regret that made Anne's heart beat in spite of herself and brought the colour into her cheeks when she thought of Captain Wentworth unshackled and free. She had feelings which she was ashamed to investigate. They were too much like joy. Senseless joy.
In part two of Persuasion by Jane Austen, Anne Elliot was Juliet Stevenson, Captain Wentworth, Tim Brierley, and Jane Austen, Surika Cusack. Mary Musgrove was Catherine Herbert, Sir Walter Elliot, Roger Hume, and Lady Russell, Patricia Gallimore. Charles Musgrove was Alistair Cameron, Henrietta Musgrove, Alison Dowling, and Louisa Musgrove, Jane Dahl. Elizabeth Elliot was Claire Falconbridge, Mrs. Musgrove, Sheila Grant, and Mr. Elliot, Peter Harlow. Mrs. Clay was Hedley Nicklow, Admiral Croft, Geoffrey Dench, and Sophia Croft, Tina Gray. Captain Benwick was Tony Turner, Captain Harville, Paul Alexander, and Mrs. Smith, Carol Boyd. The square piano was played by Kenneth Mobbs. Persuasion has been dramatised for radio by Micheline Wandor and was directed at Pebble Mill by Vanessa Whitburn.